What's up, the aliens? Going to cash those paychecks. It's payday. You got happy hour. You got going out to dinner. Whatever you are doing on this weekend, we appreciate that you got your week started with the DA show. Before you head out, thanks for keeping it locked here. It is the best of the DA show for this Friday morning. Check out all the laughs, the hijinks, and the takes from this morning's show right here.
David Ortiz said on television that we should not be mad at the Astros. No, we should be mad at the former Astro that said something. And you knew this was coming. You knew this was coming from one of the old guys that isn't directly impacted or affected by the cheating. You knew this was going to happen. Well, why didn't you say something when it was happening in Houston? Why didn't you try to stop it? Why'd you let it happen? Why'd you say something only when you left? You knew we were going down this road. You just knew. And then, on top of it, David Ortiz not only does the, why didn't you say something to stop it when it was happening? Not only do we have that, but we have the, everybody should have known anyway. What? David Ortiz, ridiculous for calling out snitching? Of course, it is where we begin. Your cold open.
I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher that came out talking about it, and let me tell you why. Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of? Oh, now. So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean? Why you got to talk about it after? That's my problem, you know. Why nobody say anything while it was going on? People is not stupid. You know? Like, if I heard that, if I'm a fan that come to the stadium, every home game, like we have, at some point I'm going to hear that banging. And I'm talking about as a fan. Okay? And that's going to come out. How come there's this banging going on every time we are hitting? You know, like, it was something that it was, from what I have seen, seemed like it was something that it came to the point that it was obvious.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
What is that? What is all of that? What is all of that poppy word vomit right there? What exactly was he trying to... That audio courtesy of Nesson. Okay, so the first part, the snitching part. I think this is the most idiotic take that all of these former athletes have, these former baseball players. It's snitching. It's snitching. Don't snitch on your former teammates. Don't snitch. So we have the entire league absolutely irate at the Astros. But we should be mad at the guy that exposed the Astros. So is David Ortiz saying it would be better if Mike Fiers didn't say anything? It would be better if he just let the cheating happen and then went to a different team and never exposed it. He's saying that it's just better if we keep this buried. Which only in baseball, the idiotic unwritten rules, the coda of baseball, which is always so dumb, is we're all really mad. We can't believe the Astros did this, but you shouldn't ever snitch on the Astros if you're an Astros player. What? So this is the cycle. Mad at the Astros, but nobody in the Astros should have ever admitted anything. Okay, got it. Number two, if David Ortiz is really going to have a problem with Mike Fiers, it might be good to know the name of Mike Fiers. Quote, I'm really mad at this guy, the pitcher. Can you do a little bit more research? I mean, just a hair. He's the most important name in baseball in years for what he exposed. Can you just know the name? And then thirdly, fans that go to the game every day should have known about the trash can banging. Again, what exactly is this take? because I got to let Poppy know, if you're sitting in the 400 level, it's going to be kind of hard to hear garbage cans being banged behind home plate. This just in, if you're at Minute Maid Park, up in the upper deck, out in right field, you might not hear garbage cans banging from behind home plate. Oh, and also, Poppy, here's a small thing to remember as well. If you're a fan going to every baseball game, every home game, to connect the dots, and you're close enough to a home plate to hear the trash can, what exactly is that fan's responsibility? To alert Rob Manfred? Is that what the suggestion is here? That it was so evident and so obvious that fans should have known about the trash can banging that, what, they should have alerted somebody? So Mike Fiers, let's just get on Poppy's level here. Mike Fiers should, in the middle of the cheating scandal, step up in the middle of the locker room and say, we can't do this, even though his manager tried to do it and couldn't stop it. He should be the one that says, let's not do this. Then the fans should have connected the dots in 2017 when they heard the trash can banging, and I guess they should have tried to put a stop to it. I'm trying to figure out the logic here, but I'm having a tough time. Remember, Pedro said the same thing when this came out. Mike Fiers, snitch. It is so stupid. It is so stupid. If you are looking to eradicate a team from a competitive advantage that's illegal, which 95% of the league right now is hammering the Astros for, the only way that can happen is if Mike Fiers says what he did. Oh, Big Poppy, just so sloppy. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. So apparently we've hit the ridiculous takes about the Astros portion of this fallout. Mraz, what's your favorite part of the Poppy defense, accusation, explanation? I don't know what to really define it as.
Look, my favorite part is, and not to get too personal, but coming off what he just came off in the Dominican Republic, where, you know, he was shot, and we had all the stories come out about mistaken identity, but then was he involved with some drug kingpin and in the Dominican Republic and everything? And then you hear him reference Mike Fiers in a snitches get stitches situation. Well, how am I naturally now not supposed to go back to what happened in the Dominican Republic and go, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to believe this drug kingpin thing because you won't admit it, but now you're blasting Mike Fiers for a snitches get stitches? How do I not connect the dots and go, that's how he feels about anybody snitching on anything? How can I not naturally feel that way?
So when you heard Poppy call out Fiers for snitching, you immediately went to him having a near assassination in the Dominican.
Because the cover-up was at a Poppy's camp simply, it was mistaken identity. Yeah, because obviously now we know how you feel about snitching on situations. I know that that's how you... snitches get stitches, right? So obviously you're not going to snitch on some kingpin lord drug cartel man in the Dominican Republic whose wife you may or may not have been, you know, doing whatever with. How can I now not think that that didn't happen when it's so obvious you would never admit that that happened because you think snitches get stitches?
But so who was the snitch that nearly got Big Poppy stitched?
Good point. Big Poppy did get stitched. I would imagine when you get shot, you get stitched.
Yeah.
Somebody snitched, and Poppy's not happy with him, so he's now, I guess we're going to correlate everything to snitches get stitches.
Okay, so your connection is Big Poppy resents somebody in the DR that snitched on him that nearly got him assassinated.
Exactly. So now if you're Mike Fiers, he's out on all snitches. Never a snitch.
Of all the messengers with this, Big Poppy on the snitching. And how funny is it that his buddy Pedro said the same thing a couple of weeks ago when this first broke a couple of months ago? Mike Fiers should never do that. This idea that Mike Fiers should have stood up in the middle of a clubhouse and been like, hey, man, guys,
I mean, I know we're winning a lot of games here, and I know you guys have, like, this really extensive cheating program, and I know that our front office has developed its own program for it as well, and I know the manager has smashed your computer a couple times, but I'm totally not cool with this, guys. We should definitely stop. And if you guys don't stop, I'm telling on all of you guys.
You get a wedgie and stuffed in a locker.
What does Big Papi and Pedro expect Mike Fiers to have done? To set off flares from Minute Maid Park? We're cheating! Rob Manfred, we're cheating! Like, there's 24 other guys in the clubhouse that are going to do what they want to do. Jose Altuve may or may not have even taken the signals. He's the best player on the team. And he, if he wasn't taking the signals, apparently couldn't stop it either. So Mike Fiers is going to sit there and be like, you know what? This is so not cool. I'm totally going to the principal's office. You guys are going down.
Also, one more thing to note on that, because you're so right. Is Big Papi saying this if he's currently playing on the Boston Red Sox? Because every star player in every team has trashed the Houston Astros who's currently playing.
Right? I mean,
is Big Papi going to come out if he's wearing the Red Sox uniform and on the team going, you know what? Forget what Clay Bellinger and Aaron Judge and Nick Markakis and everybody else has said. Snitches get stitches, dude.
How about if Big Papi was on the 2017 Red Sox team that is, or 2018, that is currently being investigated for cheating as well? I mean, come on. The whole thing is so absurd.
855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS.
Last week, Bogus, you weren't around for most of this because you were on your Cancun jaunt.
Yeah.
But we had such fire coming out from the former producers or the other producers around CBS Sports Radio towards Mraz. Mike Fiers. There was just every single day around here, you had Anthony Pierno, you had Tom DeCelestino, Mike Samter, guys behind the scenes here or producers in other shows calling out Mraz and saying, I could do your job.
Yeah, when we ran out of bracelets in Cancun, we traded those videos. I played the video for people so they could learn how terrible Sean is at his job, and they gave me a trinket.
And not only did those three guys take him behind the woodshed, but I had other submissions. Hey, raising my hand, I'd like to go next, please.
Right.
There are three or four other producers, either former or current, that want to do the same thing. And I said, you know, I think 1 week was enough here.
Right.
But we could make this like a month-long series. And, you know, it mainly revolved around lack of work ethic and what does he really do? And now he thinks he's talent, and so he's doing even less. And he's kind of ridden the coattails of the success of the show. And there was just a lot of resentment. He leaves early every day. He doesn't know anything, so he just spews inaccurate facts, and that's his bit, that's his brand. And I will say that I was very frustrated by a lot of this and what I perceived as a lack of commitment. And Mraz and I had a long 1 hour drawn out therapy session. It was much like couples therapy, I think, for both of us. On the PGP, it was a 1 hour, 60 minutes-esque discussion. And by the end of it, I think that we had both found some common ground. And I had understood more about Mraz's plight. And that is that I'm not always great at identifying for him what he needs to do. And sometimes, well, most of the time, he's not wired to have his own initiative. And so there's been a cloudy, well, what do you want me to do? What am I expected to do? And you can't blame me if you don't tell me. And I'm kind of like, well, you should be thinking about other things to do. And you also shouldn't bail out early as the rest of the newsroom is working like worker bees. It's a bad look. And Mraz's point is, hey, if I'm more efficient at what I do, what does it matter when I leave? And the thing that hit me that pulled my heartstrings most was that I could tell in our discussion, Mraz's, his intentions are good. He wants to do well. He likes to be applauded. He wants the cookie. He doesn't not want to do good. And that the baby thing has thrown him for a loop. That this transition of waking up really early and having a baby, having a newborn the first 6 weeks,
he's been balancing a lot. And I said, I need to be more understanding of that. That part of this, I don't know how I would feel.
So you got a baby?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
I do not.
So I'm borrowing a kid.
I don't know how I would handle this. So I came to some type of agreement where I said, you know what? I need to be better as a leader around here, and I need to understand more of Mraz's stress on the baby front, and he wants to do well. I just have to accept that initiative and ambition is just not part of his equation. Now, maybe he can get there. Maybe he can get there. But for now, I've got to be a little better in what I do. And so that's where I am. And I think this week, Mraz has had a really good week. I do. I think he's had a really good week. Remember this week when there was a mistake made about when Stunned to a News was supposed to be?
Yeah.
You tossed to it, and there was no open.
No, there's nothing. Silence. Crickets.
Because Sam Rubinoff had from the sheet seen that that was not the segment that Mraz told you was Stunned to a News.
Correct.
He had gotten it wrong. And immediately, Mraz said, that can't happen. That can't happen. That's on me. Unacceptable. No excuses. Whoa.
Yeah.
Now, that's growth. That's
that is truly stunning.
That's evolution. This week, yesterday, Peter King, that's a significant, valuable voice on the same day as Pete Prisco, on the same day as Ian Eagle. That's a three-guest day around here.
I know, and those are heavy hitters.
Those are great guests.
Those are headlining guests.
Those are headliners. It's a good day. Mraz has gone the extra step, even though he fought it at first, to do the Best Of podcast this week. The response on the Best Of has been overwhelmingly positive. People love it. They really love it. And so I have to say, after everything that happened last week, and after our 60 Minutes PGP, I think not only have you had a redemption week, I think you found a better gear for yourself, and I think that maybe this intermittent fasting is the key. You're not distracted. You're not eating until 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. That's after our show. Without the distraction of thinking about what you're going to eat and actually eating during the show, I feel like you're more accountable. You're more focused.
Perhaps. I will say, I don't know if it was by design just now, or on purpose, but I feel like prior to the very big compliment you just gave me where you set up some of my fallacies, I feel like you were setting me up to throw blame at you that you still don't understand certain things, but I'm going to refuse from saying that.
I still don't?
Well, can I just defend myself one more time here?
I thought I just glossed you.
You absolutely did, but I do think on the record, because listeners are listening, something does need to be said about what you just said.
Oh, man. I thought that was the nicest segment I could have ever done.
I appreciate it. No, and look, I do want to do well, and I appreciate everything you said, and I am glad that it got noticed, because if we're going to notice the bad things, we should notice the good things. I'm in favor of that in life.
No doubt.
But again, you harped on, and I just counted on my hand three times me leaving early. In what universe am I leaving before I'm supposed to leave? That does not happen. When you say the newsroom is working like busy bees or buzzer bees or whatever kind of bees they want to be, they're doing whatever their jobs are. Yeah, but like, am I judging everybody else here who's not in here working before, like when I'm working and they're not here yet? Am I judging them?
Well, look, I think,
I mean, when you're stuck in a Holland Tunnel today, am I judging you that I've been here grinding away on the show?
No, but what I'm saying is, prior to this promotion,
sure,
you at 10 a.m. Eastern time after, no, at noon Eastern time after we were off the air in our old time slot.
Go ahead.
You had a 1 hour production meeting for a WFAN midday show that was 2 hours long. So that means you were here until 3 p.m. every single day. That was a bonus 3 hours of your work day that did not even apply to us. And it's not like anymore you're staying that much later, like another 3 hours.
Sure.
So when the people in the newsroom are pounding out their shifts and they're thinking, oh, Mraz has his 3 hours of his workday shaved and he's out of here 45 minutes after the show, I'm saying that perception has grinded people. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's just the perception that they've had, and they've all referenced this.
I understand that. I will just say, it's 2 hours of my workday, in essence, shaved, because I'm still here for that 45 minutes that would have been the pre-production meeting.
Okay.
Again, that was my old role where it was, I mean, I was doing something that no other producer here was doing, where I had to produce at two different stations.
You were a pioneer.
Right. I was a pioneer. Never.
It's like putting bacon on a chicken teriyaki.
And I handled it as best I could. Could I have done better? Sure. Were there times where I think I was exceeding expectations at the time? Sure. But, like, that was, it's almost like now perception I'm being punished because I had to do so much on the last time. Is that, I mean, do you get what I'm saying there?
I kind of understand that, but I do think that some of the other producers work longer hours than you total.
Sure. And but so, then they better bring that heat to all those producers that come in at night an hour before their show ends and leave right when their show is over.
Well, but there's an expectation on you because you're now the executive producer of the Morning Drive show. This is like the expectation of, hey, Tom Brady can't have a mediocre year.
I totally agree. I will also just say this.
Patrick Mahomes can't throw 25 interceptions.
Let me just, and not that we should compare anything, but 4 out of 5 days of every week, I am in the same elevator bank out of here as Al Dukes, the producer of Boomer and Geo, on TV on CBS Sports Network, the executive producer of that morning show, and we're in it virtually the same time. So,
I don't think that's true.
Oh, that is true.
Because I'm here when Al leaves, and he's not leaving before 11 a.m. four times a week.
I am in the elevator with him frequently leaving.
Well, you're also a victim of your reputation before this. Well,
sure.
Al's reputation is as one of the best producers in this building and one of the best producers nationally. You do not have that reputation. You need to build up to that reputation.
He's 50. I'm 32.
Well, you should be chasing him.
I am. You know what? I should have just took the compliment and shut up, well, but I just felt like it needed to be addressed because by saying that, you're giving ammo to the newsroom, acting as if I, again, am not doing my job, which I am.
All right,
I just did 12 minutes on how you did a great job.
See, you're ruining the whole end of the week for me here.
And let me
say, I can't bite my tongue.
Let me say one thing in Sean's defense and then one thing not in Sean's defense. In his defense, a lot of the people pointing fingers at him from the newsroom are similarly guilty of not necessarily being here as long as they're supposed to. So they should be careful pointing out time card issues. But they also do those things quietly. They're not posting pictures at 4 a.m. from Penn Station asking for love because I'm up early grinding.
I did that the first day. I haven't done that since the first week.
Right. So you smartly have calmed things down. This began with you very loudly celebrating yourself.
Yeah, taking bows at your hours.
And that drew everyone's attention to it. If you come and go quietly, people are less likely to point things out. We've said it before. My schedule right now is the easiest of all update anchors. I don't go walking around flaunting it in Rich Ackerman and Jay Berman's faces.
Here, honestly,
although Rich deserves it.
Here's where I feel I should not be attacked. Because I'm such a nice man, all right? And I leave
here.
I make sure
to stop.
No, I say goodbye to everybody in that newsroom where a lot of people just do the Irish goodbye. Should I be just be doing the Irish goodbye because now that's drawing attention because I'm saying goodbye?
Well,
have a nice day, Ack. Have a nice day, Jacques Alone. Have a nice day, Pierre. I mean, that's nice of me.
I just don't know how you focus on the negative here. I did a whole segment on how I thought you had a great week, and then you focus on the negative.
I'm not focused on the negative because I have had a nice week. I'm happy that we've been working in lockstep. I just felt like that part of it, you hammer home. I counted three times that I just felt like, again, needed to be addressed just to make sure we're on the same page. But I appreciate you noticing it again. If we're going to crush me and have producer interviews, tell me what a bad job I'm doing. When I do a good job, look, you may say that's giving me a cookie. I like the fact that if we're going to focus on it, be focused on the positive, too. There's a good week, good, healthy week of the show. Can't wait to get Pete back next week. And we're going to have another strong week.
Okay, very good. Kyrie Irving will have season-ending shoulder surgery. And so year number one of Kyrie in Brooklyn comes to a screeching halt, although the car never really got moving very smoothly at all. Here is Sean Marks, GM of the Nets.
Kyrie has spent the last few days visiting with a specialist, and it's been determined that he will have arthroscopic surgery on his shoulder and be out for the remainder of the season. He's obviously upset about this, and you know, we're here to support him, support the process moving forward with him and the rehabilitation.
The Kyrie Irving era in Brooklyn has been one of, I would say, discomfort.
I think Nets fans wanted to believe the best. Okay, Kyrie out of Boston. Kyrie will ultimately have Kevin Durant. Kyrie will want to redeem himself after last season. Kyrie will have a chance to fit in with a good culture, a strong organization. Even though the Nets haven't won anything, everybody around the NBA respects Sean Marks, respects Kenny Atkinson, looks at what they accomplished last year with a roster of guys nobody's ever heard of to get to the postseason. There was a lot of stuff to believe this was a really good fit for Kyrie, even without Kevin Durant. And Kyrie would have a chance for a full year to work himself into the culture, to work himself into the team, and to develop into some type of leader so that when Kevin Durant was added next year, or maybe even at the end of this year, it would be all systems go. And instead, Kyrie had flashes of brilliance like opening night and had a lot of headaches along the way and said a lot of weird things along the way and was never healthy along the way. And ultimately, year number one begins and ends after 20 games. And going into next year, I don't think any Nets fan can say with any significant confidence, oh, this is how it's going to look. This is how Kyrie fits in. We loved what we saw here. This is what it's going to work like. I don't think you can say that. I don't think the Nets brass can say that. And in so many ways, Kyrie, with a history of injuries and a history of saying bizarre things and a history of not knowing really where he's coming from and what he's thinking and how he feels, it's just another unknown. KD's an unknown and Kevin Durant's an unknown. I should say Kyrie's an unknown and KD's an unknown and the situation's an unknown. And I look at Kyrie Irving and I wonder, is his career ever going to be what it could have been? Now, that's for a lot of different reasons. But when you think about what Kyrie could have been, especially when he was alongside LeBron James, his very best is taking and making one of the biggest shots in NBA history. His shot, Game 7, 2016 NBA Finals, will forever be one of the most significant shots in NBA history. And as the running mate next to LeBron, however many years they wanted to do it together, they could have competed for championships. Very obviously. The years before LeBron, Kyrie wasn't good enough to get them to the playoffs. The year with LeBron, every year they were in the NBA Finals. And had they not run into one of the historically great teams of all time, they might have had three championships together. And had Kyrie not forced his way out in that year number four, they might have had four championships together. But year number one, Kyrie gets injured, is not healthy for the NBA Finals. Year two, they win it. Year three, they run into a team that is arguably the most talented team ever assembled. And year four, he forces his way out. And his 2 years in Boston were underwhelming, to say the least. We found out that the Celtics are clearly better without him and with Kemba Walker. And this year, you could argue that the Nets are better without him. And so maybe next year he's back with Kevin Durant and maybe they are great. And maybe they end up winning an NBA Finals. Maybe they go to the NBA Finals. Kyrie has an amazing series. And maybe we just look at Kyrie as, wow, what a great player. But I can't help but think that Kyrie Irving's career will always be a disappointment. I can't help but think that. That maybe this works in Brooklyn, but more likely it's all about Kevin Durant and that they kind of have to navigate how weird Kyrie is and how he doesn't really fit in and how he's not really a leader and how he thinks he's better than he is. And I feel like if the Nets are going to succeed next year, it's going to be Kevin Durant and the culture of the Nets and Atkinson and the young players around him and not that Kyrie Irving is the perfect running mate. And that's weird to say considering Kyrie can be one of the best players in basketball, but he's always injured. And we don't know if he's actually an addition to your team. And we now see how ridiculous and stupid it was for him to force his way out of town when he was with LeBron. He already admitted that that was a mistake, that he shouldn't have done that, that he wishes that he didn't do it. And now, I mean, again, I'm not going to blame him for his shoulder going bum, but I don't know. I just can't see a scenario where Kyrie lives up to, wow, that guy got everything out of his career. He was a great teammate. He won a lot, and you wanted him on your team. I just don't see that. And, I mean, Merez, in his final 35 games of the season, would it surprise anybody, including you as a Nets fan, if the Nets were better off just knowing that Kyrie's not in and out of the lineup every night?
Yeah, I mean, last night's kind of proof of it. They went down 22-6 last night on the day they found out Kyrie was not coming back the rest of the year versus a team that they hate after the playoffs last year. They had a very ugly series versus the 76ers. Down 22-6, that could have been good night delights. They ended up building a 20-point lead in the second quarter, back and forth, end up losing the game because they just didn't have enough horses in the fourth. But on a day where Kyrie, their leader, goes down for the year, and they come out and show no punch in the first quarter and go down 22-6, wouldn't most teams in that situation melt down? Instead, the Nets fought back. So I think the relief of not having to worry about Kyrie in and out and just know, hey, this is our team, this is what we got, let's go roll, I think already benefited them on night one now having that monkey off the back of not worrying about him in and out, in and out, in and out.
Well, you've also watched this team closer than most. Was Kyrie an addition this year?
He was.
When he was in.
He was. And one of the last times we saw him, he had a 50-point outburst, absolutely put the team on his back. They beat the Bulls, who at the time the Bulls were about three games back of the Nets, pushing for one of those bottom of the half spots. When the first injury came up, the Nets were on a West Coast trip earlier in the year. He ended up going on the road in a game in Utah when all day it was said Kyrie was going to be out, Kyrie was going to be out. He said, heck no, I'm going to play this game. And they beat the Jazz, and Kyrie was awesome in that game. So part of that, do I think Kyrie gets a little bit of a bad rap? I do. I think he only really had one fallacy this year, and that was when he said, we're going to need to add pieces to this. But, you know, when they hadn't even played with Durant yet and failed to mention Jared Allen, who's a big part of the team. And I think that might have rubbed people the wrong way.
When he was calling out the front office for needing more pieces.
Needing more pieces.
Including more than just Kevin Durant.
Right, which is idiotic. Just wait to see how the team reacts next year with Kevin Durant. Outside of that one 30-second clip that was a blip, I think Kyrie, for the most part this year, has been a guy that has been a positive for the Nets. You would have liked to have had him on the floor, but what I can't take is you will get fans in Boston and some other fans questioning Kyrie's injury, questioning how much will he really has to be on the floor, and I find that to be nonsense, and I think that's what kind of rubs people the wrong way about Kyrie is, like, do you even trust the fact that he's injured? He very evidently has a serious shoulder injury here that they're getting cleaned up, and it's probably smarter than the Nets to realize they're not going to an NBA Finals this year without Kevin Durant. Could they have waited and done this in-and-out stuff over the next 15 games and had him come back? Sure, but much like the Warriors shutting down Klay Thompson for the year, it just doesn't make any sense. So get him cleaned up. It was always about next year anyway with Durant. So I think Kyrie and many times gets a very bad rap, and I think ultimately he has been a positive for the Nets. It just stinks that they only got 20 games out of him.
But there is a part of Kyrie that's weird to manage. And the Nets have kind of admitted that.
Sure.
Right? Kenny Atkinson has kind of admitted, you know, he's a different guy. You've got to manage him a different way.
And I think they have, though.
They may have, but does that get in the way of winning? Does that get in the way of a positive franchise moving forward?
It's hard for me to say it gets in the way of winning when he was able to win with LeBron. And the reason I say that is it might get in the way of winning if this team was built around Kyrie Irving going forward. Beginning next year, they will not be built around Kyrie Irving. They will be built around Kevin Durant, and Kyrie will be his Robin to Durant being Batman. So as long as you have that bigger presence there, that bigger star power there, maybe in the end it gets ugly after 3-4 years if Kyrie wants it to be about him, perhaps. But I think for the next 2 years when Kevin Durant comes into focus, I don't think it will get in the way of winning because it will be Durant's team first and foremost.
So I like your point there that if it's about Kyrie as the center of the sun, it's a problem.
Yes.
But remember that Kevin Durant doesn't have the personality that LeBron James does. LeBron is the ultimate alpha male. LeBron says, fall in line. This is how we do things. This is your role. This is my role. This is your role. This is how this works. Kevin Durant isn't like that. Kevin Durant isn't the ultimate alpha male that can tell Kyrie, no, you do it this way. If he develops more of that, then I would agree. I wonder, though, that both of those guys are sensitive or difficult to manage, or I don't know. I don't know how that works. I mean, I don't think you know how that works.
No, I think it's impossible to know how
it works. I don't think they know how it's going to work.
No, I think you're strictly just, and again, I think the biggest question isn't about revolving around the sun or Kyrie's attitude or anything. I think going forward, the biggest question with whether this will work or not is simply health. What will Kyrie be with another injury coming off the shoulder injury? What will Durant be coming off the Achilles? I think that is a much bigger question than how will they be able to manage those personalities and all of that. I think the injuries are the bigger concern here, and I think that's when you'll find out about this team. If they're not their same selves, if they're not the same players they were, not the same stars they were, maybe each has a little bit off their fastball, and because of that, they get a little self-conscious, and maybe the team struggles with times when they don't think they should be, then maybe that can manifest itself into some infighting and stuff like that. But I really don't know that the whole alpha or anything like that's going to be a big deal when, again, everybody's going to have a microphone in Kevin Durant's face after these games before they have a microphone in Kyrie Irving's face. And I think if the team was revolving around Kyrie Irving, it would be a much bigger deal.
Either way, the 2020-2021 Brooklyn Nets are one of the most fascinating experiments in sports history. You've got two incredibly talented but uniquely wired players playing together, and their potential should be huge. Their potential is huge, but we don't know about their personalities, we don't know about their leadership, and we don't know about their health. So next year's Nets team could be a machine, or it could be a season-long head-scratcher. We just don't know. But for now, Kyrie Irving is shut down for the rest of the season. In August, there's going to be the White Sox and Yankees playing in Iowa on that Field of Dreams field. It's not actually going to be on the Field of Dreams movie set field. That field, apparently, as we debated this on this show, isn't up to MLB code. So they had to build a makeshift temporary stadium next to that, which is connected to the cornfields by basically a corn maze. So there is a field in the cornfields of the Field of Dreams where the White Sox and the Yankees will play, but it's not the actual movie set. So a lot of people going to this game August the 13th would want to see, obviously, the movie set field. And this is a tourist attraction. People go there from all around to see the Field of Dreams movie set. Unfortunately, if you don't have a ticket to August 13th's game, you can't see the movie site either. That the movie site, for a full week, 8 days surrounding the game, will be shut down. I guess this is to build out the baseball stadium and maybe for security purposes as well. Maybe they need the space, maybe for security. But for 8 days surrounding this game, four on each side, nobody is allowed to see the actual Field of Dreams field. I think if you have a game ticket, you might have limited access to it, but basically, by and large, and that game's only going to seat like, what, 8,000 people or something. Mm-hmm. By and large, you cannot go see the Field of Dreams field for 8 days surrounding this game. So let's ask this question. Number one, would you want to see the field?
Yes. Can't go all the way there and not see the field.
You'd be going there for a game,
right?
Which is going to be like 500 yards from the field,
yeah,
but not be able to see the field.
No, you got to get to the field.
But if you have a ticket, hypothetically, there might be limited access to that field.
Yeah, that's fine.
So if you're a rando Joe, average Joe six-pack, you don't have a ticket to the game, you're not bummed that you can't go see that field.
For those 8 days?
Yeah.
No, that's fine. I get it.
But you'd want to see the field.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would make the trip to see the field. If I'm going for the game, if I have a ticket for this game, you got to let me see the actual field.
Do you have interest in general in seeing the field?
I mean, I do, but would I ever actually pay money and schedule a trip to go from New York to Iowa to see it? Probably not.
Okay. Mraz, do you have interest in seeing the Field of Dreams field?
I take back everything I said about the Dave Matthews thing, about Bilotti's vacations. It takes a real special kind of loser to want to go see the Field of Dreams field and make that a vacation. It really does. It really does. Why would you spend your hard-earned dollars? Forget going. The game thing's different because that's cool. Like, they're playing a baseball game there, and obviously then you would get a chance to see with a ticket. Take that out of the equation. If you are not going to see the New York Yankees play the Chicago White Sox, why on earth are you trekking to the middle of Iowa, 20 miles from Dubuque, to go out and go, and what are you going to do? Stare at it for 2 minutes and go, all right, honey, let's get back home to Boston. And if Connor just for 1 second could, please cue up this music. I have a list of the attractions that are listed on the Field of Dreams website that you can see, because obviously when you see the Field of Dreams, you're going to look for other stuff to do. You're booking a vacation. You ready for this real quickly?
Yeah.
You can see the Country Junction, the Becker Lane Organic Farm, the Park Farm Winery, the Dyersville Area Chamber of Commerce, Travel Dubuque, Eastern Iowa Tourism Association, the Iowa Baseball Museum of Norway. What? Wait, who cares? What? Who cares what Norwegian baseball players came from Iowa? And the Cedar Rapids Colonels Minor League Minnesota Twins affiliate. Oh, and a little house for the Iowa Division of Tourism. There is nothing to do. You have how many days off of work do people get across this country? Maybe 20 if they're lucky at their job?
Let's just say 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And they're going to take time to go to the middle of Iowa to stare at a baseball field that was filmed with fake Shoeless Joe Jackson in a movie that came out in 1989. It's over 30 years old now, the movie. Who cares? It is the dumbest vacation site in the United States, and you are a special kind of loser if you're making that trip.
I do want to just correct you on one thing. The Norway Baseball of Iowa Museum is not about Norwegian baseball players that came from Iowa. That obviously would be a bit of a
heck of a feat.
Well, who knows what it's about, but apparently I got to go because there's nothing else to do.
It's in Norway, Iowa. That's the name
of
it.
Well, that's confusing too.
Well, yes, but it's a little bit less confusing than having Norwegian players from Iowa.
Bottom line is this.
Again, we're all connected by water, so Iowa and Norway, they're interchangeable.
It is a stupid vacation decision to go see this field.
Well, look, I love that movie, but I have to admit, I'm not going out of my way to see the Field of Dreams field.
Exactly.
If I was driving through, now I've driven through Iowa. I've actually gone to a University of Iowa football game. Unbelievable people. I went to Kinnick Stadium and had one of the best college football experiences of my life. It was absolutely everything college football should be. I was the rival fan. Syracuse played there, and they taunted me good-heartedly. They gave me beers. We had a good time. We yapped at one another, but they were inviting. They were warm. They were awesome. The experience was awesome. It was a night game. We lost 35-0, I think, or 45-10 or something, and I had the best time ever. That's how good those fans were. And you drive through Iowa, I believe the state slogan is Fields of Opportunity. You just drive through miles of fields of corn and sorghum and soybean. It is so serene. It is so peaceful. You don't hear anything. You just see birds and blue sky and cornfields. I love it. That's my type of vibe. I love it. There's nothing. I like that. But am I going to fly into Dubuque to drive to the Norway Iowa Baseball Museum to then go see a movie set? No, that's not my idea of an interesting vacation.
But there are people that do this. Why would you do that?
I think if it's in driving distance.
Right, okay.
I say if you're within 90 minutes to 2 hours drive, okay, I could see that being a day
right.
trip. I could see that being a weekend.
Right, if you live in Iowa and your kids are baseball fans, and it's like would be us driving up to Cooperstown because we're not far from that.
Yes, exactly.
I get that. I'm not. That's not the people I'm crushing. You live in Iowa, you're sure you're great people. That's what you got. You got to hold on to it. They filmed the movie here, sure. What I am telling you is if you are not one of the 8,000 who holds a ticket and you have dare ever taken an airplane and flown anywhere near that place to make sure you had to see it, there's no defending. You're a loser. You have lost at life. You are troubled. There is some serious issues going on.
Oh, God.
There is no reason for that whatsoever. That is scary malpractice use of vacation days.
Malpractice use of vacation days.
You've used fallacy twice this morning.
Both now incorrectly.
Yes, he's 0 for 2 on fallacy. And now you've sprinkled in malpractice. I think you pretty much got that one correct. But this
I'm trying
is
here, folks.
The after effects of this SAT studying, even though it was one night and it was for history, it seems to be, it has stuck with you.
It's working. Yeah.
Kind of.
No, I'm telling you. This intermittent fasting where he's not eating during the show is really helping him. It's helping him focus. It's helping him have a direction. It's helping him
cue Connor for theme music during a list that he researched. I'm telling you, I love this fasting.
I appreciate it. I just look, if I'm going to get shots at being talent, I better be a little more professional. And I'm going to do my homework here.
I mean, imagine, this has been your cross to bear for what? Almost seven plus years now.
We're into year eight
of carrying this guy, wondering how we got here. We thought about power lines, poisoning. We've blamed mom and dad. Mom
has blamed spiders. Dad.
Right. There's a lot going on. What if he was just in a sugar haze? And the fact that you have now eliminated all of this food in the morning and freed yourself to think clearly and work clearly, that you have been like almost self-poisoning. Like, you've hurt yourself. You've put yourself in a place where you could not be at your best. It's been all your fault. Now, taking all these snacks away is letting you come close to your full potential.
This is amazing. What a pivot point in American history and DA show history.
Yeah. Someday somebody will be studying this for an SAT.
Mm-hmm. We're going to call it not intermittent fasting, just marazzing.
Yeah, this will be like the Atkins diet, the Maraz diet.
Exactly.
Andrew Bogish is in with your headlines. Good morning, Andrew.
DA, it was 8 days, but it felt like 8 weeks. Sacramento Kings basketball back from the All-Star break last night, which meant Gary Gerald back behind the mic.
Fox walks the dribble rather casually into the front court. Now looks to the right wing. Spins back toward the left. Moves to the left elbow. Steps back. Going to shoot the three. On target. You betcha. De'Aaron Fox knocks down his fourth three-pointer of the night. He's got 25 points. Kings now lead by 7, 120 to 113.
De'Aaron Fox scored 26 in a 129-125 home win over the Grizzlies. But maybe Gary Gerald isn't your cup of tea.
So pleasant, though. Gary's so pleasant.
Golly gee, you betcha.
He once worked on telegrams.
Right, exactly. He invented them, I think. But now maybe you need a little more grit than Gary Gerald in your morning to get you going. So we present Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes from Learfield IMG College.
Crossword pass on the right side of the bay with a ball fake. Steps up. No look pass in the corner. Schwartz for three. Oh! May the Schwartz be with you!
That's a Deshaun Schwartz three. Johnson and Colorado, though, just warming up.
Hook pass behind him. Seward, another three. He fires and trades from downtown. Somebody call the Boulder Fire Department because this place has been lit.
So we've got a terrible Star Wars reference, and then this place has been lit.
No, a terrible star balls.
Well, right.
Space balls. A terrible
star.
A terrible. Sorry.
No, star balls are what we discussed with Steph Curry.
I was thinking about Steph Curry's Instagram. A terrible space balls reference.
You're right. I forgot about space balls.
And then a Boulder Fire Department because this arena is lit. This is awesome.
That again, Mark Johnson on Learfield IMG in Colorado beat USC last night 70-66 amid the flames in Boulder.
Gary Gerald, here's the Sacramento Kings bringing the ball up court. 1 second left, a heave from half court. It's good. And the Sacramento Kings have won their 19th straight game. Golly, that was a big one.
This is Mark Johnson. The Buffs trail by 42. There's a steal in the backcourt. Back the other way. The arena has exploded. May the Schwartz be with you.
Mark Johnson would stuff Gary Gerald in a locker if he could, right? You get that feeling?
You would take Gary Gerald's 85-year-old head, slam dunk it, and then put it into the locker.
What's up? Buffs basketball for life, sucker.
Could we get Colorado and Sacramento to play a game and have them next to each other so Johnson could be like right in Gary Gerald's ear making these calls?
Every time the Buffs hit a three, he turns to Gary Gerald, in your face, Buffs basketball. Call the fire department. Gary Gerald's hairpiece is en fuego. Can you play Mark Johnson one more time?
Which one do you want, Schwartz or the fire?
The Boulder Fire Department.
Hook pass behind him. Seward, another three. He fires and trades from downtown. Somebody call the Boulder Fire Department because this place has been lit.
So
Somebody call the coroner, Gary Geraldini.
Put the toe tag on Gary Gerald. This one is D-O-A. Rising from the ashes, the Buffalo's basketball program. Take that, Mel Tucker.
Oh, my God, that would be amazing. I got to go out and listen to the whole game. There's got to be some veiled shots of Mel Tucker. There's no doubt.
So there is a national holiday now. The days that the Colorado Buffaloes team plays the same nights as the Kings, we must have some type of Gary Gerald versus Mark Johnson war. This is going to happen again before the end of the season. These two on the same night. There is nothing better nationally than these two.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
LeBron James asked about the final possession in the All-Star game.
We was doing the Toronto versus Philly game clincher play where you hit the shot over Embiid. They switched out on AD, and two guys went to AD, so Kawhi went directly to James. James drove the baseline and threw it to CP in the corner. And then CP drove middle, kicked it back to me, and they were scrambled defensively. For a second, I was about to go one-on-one, which you saw in the picture that I posted with me and Giannis. And then when I saw that Kyle Lowry was on Anthony, damn, that sounds crazy calling me Anthony. I've been hanging with your family too long, man. They call you Anthony. When I saw Kyle on AD, we just made eye contact and I already knew he was going to duck in, and it was just a bang-bang play right there. So,
in your perspective, or just...
Yeah,
no,
same thing.
No, no, but he's in a different spot. You ain't seen him. You ain't just hearing him. You ain't seen how I broke that down. Like,
so pretty funny that LeBron James is able to recite from memory everybody's spacing on the floor of that final play. I thought it was interesting that, number one, they called it the Toronto-Philly game winner. They wanted somebody to hit the shot like Kawhi hit the shot to eliminate the Sixers last year. So kind of a cool concept that they were looking to recreate that iconic basketball moment. Also, it goes to show you what a basketball savant LeBron is, that LeBron can remember to the moment, to the defense, to the positioning and the spacing, everybody on the floor and how it all unfolded. But it also says to LeBron when the reporter says, and what did you see, AD? LeBron going, man, I just recited it for you. Man, didn't you just see what I did? Like, LeBron kind of wanted the credit there for doing what LeBron did, but it shows what it incredible savant he is. Here is a radio.com piece that Tiki Barber helped produce about Dak Prescott and the new contract.
Tom Brady signs with the Dallas Cowboys. The NFL has to change its rules because Jerry Jones doesn't want to pay Tom what Tom wants. $50 million. Instead, Jerry and Steven give Brady a piece of the team. In order for this to work, Tom Brady has full control over the roster. He uses every bit of Jerry Jones's power and resources and brings in the greatest super team ever imagined. And the Dallas Cowboys finally go back to the Super Bowl, trying to fulfill Jerry Jones's one wish to win one more before the end. The 15-1 Dallas Cowboys face off against the 8-8 New England Patriots, who blitz their way through the postseason despite a tepid regular season. And in that Super Bowl, one play away from reaching Jerry Jones's destiny, Tom Brady decides to audible at the one-yard line, and instead of handing it off to the biggest, baddest running back in the NFL, throws an interception and walks off the field a loser. Bill Belichick is vindicated. And Jerry Jones dies years later without that elusive next championship.
Wow, that got dark really quickly.
Whoa, Tiki, pump the brakes on the pallbearer.
Wow, and Jerry Jones dies without that championship. Tiki going really, really grim there. At the end of that piece, Jerry Jones
is dead. And we all laugh in his face.
Now, we can be...
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Now, this one has been in the mainstream media earlier this week, so you might have already heard about this, but 53-year-old Dagmar Turner had a brain tumor removed recently in a London hospital. During the procedure, doctors had Turner play her violin.
What?
Yeah, she's on an operating table, lifted up a little bit. They are operating on her brain, taking out a tumor. She's got her violin in her hand, and she is strumming away.
No.
What?
Because the tumor, and now I've seen this before. There are times during brain surgery where the doctors will wake you up and have you talk or move to make sure they have not damaged another part of your brain while they're taking the tumor out.
Really?
And the issue here was this tumor was up against the part of her brain that helps control her left hand, which she would need for the violin. At times, there was the width of a credit card between good brain and tumor. So they had her at times play the violin to make sure they were not messing with her motor skills.
Whoa.
They got 90% of it out. She is home, resting, treatment continues. But the picture of this lady in the operating table,
unreal,
violin in her hand with a big, like plastic sheet for the back of her head, and there's doctors digging away. It's ridiculous.
You've got to be kidding me.
All true.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So she was able, during a brain surgery, to continue to play her violin.
She's awake with her head cut open and scalpels and things in her head, and she's playing the violin.
Oh, my God. Goodness.
I feel like I have brain freeze after eating ice cream hearing that story right now. It's, oh.
Okay, so number one, forget tough guys and snitches and all this stupid alpha male machismo testosterone nonsense. That is one of the toughest people on the face of the earth.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, obviously, she's feeling nothing, but I don't know how she's awake but also numb to her head being open.
So just think about being so fearless.
Right.
That you are aware that your head is being operated on and you can focus on playing the violin. That is a next level type of focus and mental discipline. That's an amazing skill.
She must be fasting.
Are you telling me that half the NFL would be able to play a violin while having their brain worked on? I mean, come on.
No chance.
I couldn't play a violin, period.
Do we have her set list?
This woman is incredible. Number two, I'm glad that we reward heroes out there. I'm glad that we recognize heroes in law enforcement and, the military, etc. We don't reward and acknowledge those people enough. The surgeons that are within a credit card's width of killing a human being.
Or at least handicapping her, disabling her.
And doing it to that tenth of a centimeter of a degree to save their lives? I mean, that is truly heroic stuff.
I'm always amazed, too, and think of the person whose idea it was originally. Like, you know what we should do while I have Nancy's head open? I should wake her up and see if she can talk still. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea, Doc. Let's do that.
And how many mistaken brain surgeries were there in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, 1900s to get to the point where
they're just yanking chunks out thinking that was the problem?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And where we finally got to a point where to the width of a credit card, where the line is that you need to work on.
Yeah, apparently they went hours and hours before the surgery of her playing the violin, tracking her brain.
Oh, my goodness.
To see where where everything was lighting up and activating so they knew where they could go and not go.
Give the doctors credit here, too, because there's nothing worse than listening to a violin for more than 3 minutes, and they had to go hours listening to this lady play the violin. And look, I'm sure she's great for violin.
Another cultured point from Sean.
No, because there is nothing worse than having to go to your kid or somebody's kids the orchestra concert.
She's been playing since she was 10. Connor, she's not an 8-year-old stumbling through the recorder at school.
No. I'd also like you to mark that tape, because when Taylor is 10 years old and he's got to go to something, I want to play that on the air.
She ain't playing the cello, the violin, the violet, or whatever the other string ornaments are.
Not with you as her dad.
No, ornaments? Absolutely not. She wants to play the trumpet, she can play the trumpet. She's not playing a string instrument. And look, I think there's a lot of people that are great at the violin. I'm just saying, you can't listen to a violin for more than 3 minutes, you go crazy. You feel like you're on the Titanic. So doing that while performing brain surgery, you got to give the doctors credit there, because you'd be going nuts. I mean, shut up, lady, already. I'm tired of hearing the violin.
Not to get too far away from the amazing doctors and this lady, but again, his point is based on a children's school concert and the band in a movie.
That's right.
Playing on the sinking, fictitious
I've
Titanic.
I've seen the Boston Pops on the 4th of July, too. Overrated.
Your opinions on everything mean nothing.
What a take.
I mean, seriously.
What a take. And that is Stunned to a News. Thank you, Andrew. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. And our toll-free line, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. Todd is next up in Harrisburg, listening on 96.5 to CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Todd.
Happy Friday, DA. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Back at you. Excited for the weekend. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm here at the laundromat, my least favorite place on planet Earth.
Yeah, laundromat's brutal.
But anyway, after listening to Andrew's news story in the last hour about Dagmar, I was wondering if, God forbid, Sean had to have brain surgery, what would the doctors make him do to prove that he's all right? Would they put a picture of Pat Shermer in front of him and see his reaction, or put a piece of cake in a salad and make sure he went after the cake? I'm wondering your thoughts.
If you wanted to engage Mraz, I have to imagine this is a really long process, the brain surgery. We had the story last hour in Stunned to a News where there was a woman that had brain surgery, and to make sure her motor skills were functioning correctly and they did not hit the wrong side of the brain, while she was having brain surgery, she played the violin, something that she had been doing since she was 10 years old. An amazing feat of discipline and focus and fearlessness to play the violin while getting hours-long brain surgery. I would imagine that any brain surgery on Mraz, even though we make fun of the size of his brain and the functionality of it, would have to take hours. If you want to engage Mraz for hours, there's only a few options here. Cake in the middle of a salad doesn't do you very good. It gets you like 5 minutes. Maybe because he eats around the salad, eats the cake, and it's done.
You're being generous. I would engulf that in minute 40.
If you're asking him to maybe pick the chocolate in a Valentine's giant heart like Oliver Luck gave us, again, he's going to be able to. He's kind of a savant of these things. He's going to be able to pick and choose, make maybe a few early mistakes, but he'll be able to figure out the puzzle behind the chocolates probably within 10 to 15 minutes.
That's totally fair.
A Rubik's Cube? Forget it. Mraz will disengage, don't care, throw it across the room, maybe even try to bite into it like a pear.
I've tried. Not worth it. Calories and time.
There's only one thing I could imagine that will really absorb Mraz's attention for hours on end. Rewatching New York Giants games on YouTube that are at least 5 years old. Anything within the last five, you know what he can take or leave, it's got to be outside of 5 years. And if I put you right in the sweet spot of like 2002 to 2005, Mraz will not only sit there and watch an entire game that he's already seen five times and watch it patiently, attentively, and notice new things about it, he will also watch one after another, after another, after another. If you were going through brain surgery and the surgeons came to me and said, what can we do to engage Mraz from a brain standpoint, I would say put on weeks 13 through 17 in a row, 2005 New York Giants. If you play those on loop in a playlist on YouTube, you'll have them for a good 8 hours.
Yeah, I think you're really hitting the nail on the head there. Specifically, I would say I'm dying for a couple games. I can't find them from the 2000 Giants.
Okay.
personally one of my favorite teams. There's a game where Jason Seward's pants fall down versus the Lions that he's trying to cover, and the Jaguars game late that helps him clinch the division. Seahorn again recovers an onside kick. I can't find these games to save my life. If you give me a couple of those good games from the 2000 Giants, forget about it. You'll see my brain firing on all cylinders. I'd take the cake, too, but that wouldn't be necessary for the brain function.
What game in New York Giants history have you seen the most times?
Well, definitely Super Bowl 42. Definitely. I mean, the ins
the
and
actual
outs.
The actual broadcast.
The actual broadcast of Super Bowl 42. If you're asking me second most, it would probably be the Giants-Eagles game from 2002, where it was a Saturday afternoon at 4:30 that they needed to win to go on a four-game win streak and get in the playoffs that set up the botched snap 49er playoff game. Sean Williams has the interception. You're thinking they're not going to win in overtime. They're not going to make the playoffs. Unbelievable job there. I mean, right off the bat. I mean, just
and how many times everything. Have you seen Super Bowl 42 in its entirety?
I've seen Super Bowl 42 start to finish. I mean, I'm going to have to take a break, but I'll go back and finish it at least probably 56 times. That's not exactly. I watch it frequently. I probably don't go a month in my life since without having watched Super Bowl 42. You know, a lot of times at the gym, breaking it up, a couple different cardios, but I would in the 50s for sure.
You have seen the same game 50 to 60 times in its entirety.
It's unbelievable. And Eli's pick in that game should not have happened. Absolute terrible job by Kevin Boss there. Tip ball.
It's time for your Target Demo Friday, boys and girls. What are you doing as you listen to the show?
It's a three-hour black hole block party. Here's what our listeners are doing as they connect to the mothership.
Jeez, we've been on the air for nearly 2 months now in this new time slot, and nobody has noticed that it says three-hour black hole block party in the Target Demo Friday open. Even the listeners, you guys usually catch this stuff. Hank on Facebook writes, listening on 93.1 The Ticket in Middletown or Middleton, Idaho, on my way to work. Hashtag go Renegades. Hashtag grew up in Dutchess County. Well done. My neck of the woods where I grew up in the Hudson Valley of New York. Edward tweets, I'm on SiriusXM 206 driving to Detroit. Pizzapopolis in Greektown tonight. Then with my cousin and friends tomorrow for the Mid-Michigan Boat Show. Off 2 weeks before starting a great lucrative job. It's about the money, D.A.
It's about the money. M-O-N-E-Y-D-A.
Michael on Facebook writes, I'm listening on the CBS Sports app while delivering medical gases in the great state of Michigan as well. Going to be celebrating my daughter's fourth birthday this weekend. Happy birthday, Abby. Daddy loves you. Can we get a beamer? Zachary's in San Fran. Wrenching up decommissioned well pumps. Listening on radio.com.
I don't even have a job, Damien.
Tim's in Idaho. He's on the radio, CBS Sports, delivering nuclear medicine. Thanks for helping me stay awake.
Come on, Damien. Wake up.
Juan says, beam me up, D.A. Listening from my office in Milwaukee via SiriusXM 206 this weekend. Gotta have some good murder.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
Brandon's driving around in his car, CBS Sports Radio in Youngstown, Ohio.
All right.
On Twitter, you can get at us, DA on CBS. Read tweets. I'm in Paducah, Kentucky, listening to the full four-hour podcast later, ignoring the condensed version. This weekend, the family is going to be attending a fundraiser in the area's Community Kitchen Empty Bowls Project. Very cool.
All right.
Rob the 321, top of the morning, listening on the 1560 The Fan, getting through the workday and looking forward to a special date with my 7-year-old, head to do daddy-daughter dance night.
All right.
Nate tweets, I'm in Boise, heading to work, listening to Dave Matthews Band, so you set up that perfect with this picture when it comes to Bogus's vacation from earlier in the week.
Oh, okay.
His 40th, he went to Cancun to go watch Dave Matthews and trade bracelets with other couples and have Fresca vodkas. Big weekend for Bogues. Kevin's on radio.com in Auburn, Maine, working from home and noting the quote of the week from Bogus to Mraz, quote, your opinions on everything mean nothing.
Oh, okay.
Adriana's looking forward to keeping up or catching up on the week's shows over the weekend using radio.com and the app. Hoping to hear Torg Bellinger come back for round two of March Madness this year. Hashtag Lemon Zest.
Oh, valid points.
Sanchez Blue, this is Bear Boxing Mail and listening to you guys on the radio. at the Five Points Post Office in Corpus Christi. Go Bad Boys Astros and the Las Vegas Raiders.
You are a machine of death.
Spider Donkey tweets. He's Bill's Mafia. Radio.com. Rowing machine. Hashtag Target Demo Friday.
Now, wait a minute.
Ryan's at work this Friday morning. Listen to y'all. Also from Corpus Christi, Texas.
All right.
Aaron tweets, I'm listening on radio.com, getting ready to deliver a jockalone of Girl Scout cookies this weekend so that my daughter can get a little iron on her cookie patch. Where's my patch?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Alien OG tweets, morning DA in lovely Lawrence, Kansas, listening on the CBS Sports app. I'm printing labels for Boulevard Brewing's next yet-to-be-released beer. Need some? I know you guys love Boulevard. I got you, dog.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
Ooh, baby. If I could start off my weekend with a Boulevard wheat right now, ice cold, and maybe a little barbecue from Jack Stack or Oklahoma Joe's or Q39, I'd be doing very, very well. That's a good start to a weekend. Thanks, everybody, for a Target Demo Friday. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And stunt to a news was the story of a woman who had brain surgery and was playing the violin during the brain surgery.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Forget tough guys and snitches and right. All this stupid alpha male machismo testosterone nonsense. That is one of the toughest people on the face of the earth.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, obviously, she's feeling nothing, but I don't know how she's awake, well, but also numb to her head being opened.
Put some whipped cream on my head and run around like a dum-dum.
I'm always amazed, too, and think of the person whose idea it was originally. Like, you know what we should do while I have Nancy's head open? I should wake her up and see if she can talk still. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea, Doc. Let's do that.
And how many mistaken brain surgeries were there in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, 1900s?
It's 100 years ago you're talking about. Things have changed. Well,
to get to the point
where they're just yanking chunks out, thinking that was the problem.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And where we finally got to a point where you know to the width of a credit card where the line is that you need to work on.
Yeah, apparently they went hours and hours before the surgery of her playing the violin, tracking her brain.
Oh my goodness.
To see where where everything was lighting up and activating so they knew where they could go and not go.
Give the doctors credit here too, because there's nothing worse than listening to a violin for more than 3 minutes and they had to go hours listening to this lady play the violin. And look, I'm sure she's great for
Here's
violin.
Another cultured point from Sean.
No, because look, there is nothing worse than having to go to your kid or somebody's kids. The orchestra concert.
She's been playing since she was 10. Connor, she's not an 8-year-old stumbling through the recorder at school.
No.
I'd also like you to mark that tape, because when Taylor is 10 years old and he's got to go to something, I want to play that on the air.
Daddy's always happy.
She ain't playing the cello, the violin, the violet, or whatever the other string ornaments are.
Not with you as her dad.
No, absolutely not. She wants to play the trumpet, she can play the trumpet. She's not playing a string instrument. And look, I think there's a lot of people that are great at the violin. I'm just saying, you can't listen to a violin for more than 3 minutes, you go crazy. You feel like you're on the Titanic.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Huh. Our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. At O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. DA, do you think that Big Poppy regrets what he said? That is from Jim in Massachusetts. I do not. I think Big Poppy has been applauded for his entire career for being a character, being a great talker, being a friendly personality, and I think that he is just used to everybody loving on him all the time, so he feels insulated from all of it, and I think this will be the same type of thing. Jonathan tweets, beam me up, DA. Listening on radio.com from Norco, California. After working 12 years, today is my last day working the night shift. Going to catch the podcast from now on. Keep up the good work and rock on. Hashtag Chubbo, hashtag Club House Leader.
Puffiness with sodium.
Hey, thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of the DA Show. Thanks to Connor Green on the Wheels of Steel. Great job today. Also, audio director filling in admirably for Pete the Body Bilotti, who's back next week. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on headlines. Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Have a great weekend. Be good and be good to one another. We will see you on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time, sharp. The Mothership Disconnects.